This conference is being recorded.
This is Luke Allison with CriticalBench.com, and I'm here with Rob Shaw. Rob, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing all right. Thanks for being here. Give the listeners just a really quick insight into your background. You have a really interesting background. Talk about that for a second.
Well, I'm kind of late to strength coaching. My athletic background has been pretty unspectacular, to say the least. I'm a lifelong bench warmer and second teamer, and never did anything much past high school except play some rugby in college. But I have been a lifelong gym rat and always loved training and training hard. And one thing led to another, and here my made a career change a few years ago and started strength coaching, and so that's kind of where I've come from. And in terms of this stuff, I my formal education is not in exercise science. I'm kind of a self-educated. I have a I guess my main certification is through the National Strength and Conditioning Association. I'm a certified strength and conditioning program. And I've also done a lot of certifications and seminars with other organizations out there. But for the most part, I'm a kind of a gym rat who kind of picked up the books and started studying and became a strength coach.
Now, I read that you're a graduate of the United States Coast Guard Academy. How has that influenced what you do?
I went to Coast Guard Academy and spent 5 years in the Coast Guard as an officer. And with our work with the military now, it just helped me understand a little bit about some of the guys I'm working with and some of the things they face, not specifically, but general terms. And I guess my experience at the Academy was, again, just a guy who was in the weight room all the time training and training really hard and started getting people even then to kind of follow me around and do what I was doing in the gym.
And I guess that's sort of what differentiates you from many other strength and conditioning coaches. You've sort of been there, did that, and then decided that you wanted to make a career out of it much later on, correct?
Boy, you know, I'd hate to say, within, you know, there's all types of different levels of strength and conditioning coaches, and at the collegiate level, a lot of those guys come up through internships in college weight rooms and then have formal educations in exercise science. A lot of them have master's degrees or even above. You know, in the kind of commercial fitness world, it seems like there's all types of people with different backgrounds. I hope that... I guess maybe what does differentiate from me is just I am kind of self-educated and I'm a voracious reader, and I think the work that I put into my own education may make our stuff a little bit different. I train myself and I do the stuff that we do, and so I have some firsthand experience with the training that we're putting out there and using.
You have two operations right now. Mountain athlete and military athlete. What was the origin for each of these?
I live in northwest Wyoming, and I wanted mountain athlete came first. I wanted to start a gym with my career change, and I live in a small town up here, and there's a bigger town north of us, Jackson, Wyoming, and Jackson is a mountain town in the classic sense in the West, lots of skiing and mountaineering here, and I thought it would be unique to start a gym and try to focus on training mountain athletes, and so that's how I started Mountain Athlete, and we were rolling with that for a couple years, and it turned out that more and more, I was getting more and more emails and phone calls and stuff from guys in the military who had started to do our sessions. We train climbers, but we also use general and hybrid fitness programming for that. And many military guys turned out to be using our sessions, especially in the special forces community. And one thing led to another. Some folks at Special Operations Command in at McDill Air Force Base in Tampa brought me down there to kind of show them what we were doing and how I programmed. And that led to us starting another company, Military Athlete, which is different programming, but specifically for folks in the military and tactical athletes, and law enforcement, and even the emergency services, who have really unique fitness demands, who are as much professional athletes as any NFL or NBA player. We have long careers, have durability issues. So there was a lot of carryover between my elite mountain athletes here. I work with a lot of mountain guides and other professional mountain athletes who, like soldiers, need their bodies for their work. And they need to be strong and fit and durable. They have careers that can extend 20-plus years. And there's a lot of carryover. In general, our military athlete program is quite a bit more intense than the mountain athlete stuff. It's more frequent. The mountain athlete stuff is plenty intense, but I also give those guys time to get out in the mountains and do their sport. With the military stuff, they got a training session every day.
And just having reviewed some of the programming for each, it looks like there are many similarities, as you mentioned, possibly more similarities than differences. Is that the case?
I think so, yeah. There probably are quite a few similarities. Again, in general, the difference is each is on a different cycle. In other words, they're not, the emphasis for the cycle that each is on is different. We have specific programming for my climbers at Mountain Athlete. And again, the sessions and the frequency of the sessions for the military guys is are more intense, and the sessions are more frequent and more intense. So they're doing a little bit more work than my general sessions for the mountain athlete site.
Your work draws from a really diverse group of influences. Is there a story behind that?
Yeah, I'm not that smart. I need to read and draw from coaches who have come before and have proven themselves, and I really respect. And I find that I pull nuggets of technique and programming and information and exercises from these great coaches who I've read and learned from in my own self-education. You know, this ranges from, I guess some of the big influences for me are Dan John. He's a strength coach there out of Salt Lake. I kind of call him my primary mentor, especially in the strength world. I hung out in his weight room for a week and kind of mentored under him. Everybody from him, and Dan's kind of an old school strength condition coach. He works in a private high school down in Salt Lake. Everybody from him to Mark Verstegen at Athletes Performance, who is at the cutting edge of the sports performance world. Big into movement, big into core work, big into physical therapy, and so in everything in between. My work capacity influences come from Greg Klassman, who is a founder of CrossFit, and I've been to a couple CrossFit certifications, and I think Glassman is just a genius, and his top athletes are just incredible monsters. I've spent some time with at a seminar with Mark Dwight, and Mark and his coaches have been a great influence on me. Another coach named Joe Ken, I've never met him, but I really rely on his work and one of his books that I use, have used for my strength programming. And Coach Ken now, I believe, is the football strength and conditioning coach at the University of Louisville. Used to be at Arizona State, I think. He has a little book, and you should see my copy. It's all dog-eared and written into. It's just amazing work that he's put together. Another guy on the work capacity side is Vern Gambetta, who is another well-known strength and conditioning coach, and I've just learned volumes from him. Joe Frill is an endurance guy. I'm learning from him. I can go on and on, but yeah, I do Do you try to learn and pull from as many great coaches as you can? Mike Boyle, I've learned from, Eric Cressy, all those guys. I use stuff and pull from those guys to put together, I guess, my own kind of unique programming.
Definitely. I had the pleasure to speak to Dan John recently, and that was for sure the thrill of a lifetime, so I can see why you mentioned him first. Who is a typical client at Mountain Athlete, and what type of climbing are you preparing them for?
Well, I guess one of the things that is different than us and other gyms, I don't call the people who train their clients, I call them athletes. I think that's just a little bit different. And so in our typical athletes, I have people who train here, everybody from, a housewife with a couple kids to some of the top mountaineers in the United States. So just about everybody in that gamut in between. The mountaineers that I work with, we work on them. I treat them as industrial athletes in the sense, again, they need their bodies to work. They have long careers. As important in performance for them is also durability. So I think the best thing I can do for most of those guys coming in is just to get them strong. One of the interesting things in the mountain sport world is there's not a tradition at all of the weight room work or inside gym work. Very little. Mark Twight kind of pioneered that a little bit, but most of the guys who come to my doors who are very accomplished mountain athletes have not only not worked in gym settings, but really avoided them. They've always looked down on them. And as a consequence, they're all generally pretty darn gym weak. So the best thing I can do for those type of folks straight away is just to get them stronger. And I'm an old school strength guy, nothing fancy. Just the classic barbell lifts, strongman work, that type of stuff, just to get them stronger. On top of that, we try to develop for them work or sport specific, or in their case, work specific work capacity sessions, where we train them and their cardio and their muscles that they're going to use on the mountain in their sport or in their work. So we get sport specific with them. We have developed a really unique way to train climbing in my gym. What we found is that the gym setting is not a good place to, or my gym type of setting is not a good place to train rock climbing or mountain climbing technique, but it's a great place to train the specific strength you need for those sports. And so we've developed our own system and been very successful with my professional mountain athletes in terms of getting their forearms and grip strength strong and their cardio for that type of work really strong and polished. So I guess in general, we do some general strength conditioning. We do some general work capacity work. And then we take that foundation. Once we get that foundation, we hone that to a sharp point using sport-specific programming on top of it.
And I think what you're referring to, you have a YouTube channel that's very interesting. You have people working on the different rock climbing holds and doing density work and speed work and things like that. Is that sort of what you're referring to in terms of the sport-specific preparation?
Yeah. You know, we kind of one of the interesting things about those sports and just about every sport is you can get your general fitness down, your general strength, but the real and everybody needs that. But if you can pile on top of that, solid foundation, sport-specific training, you can really see an increase in performance. And, that's something that I think is different and unique to my facility and our way of thinking here. And we've done that not only for our mountain guys, but also for our military guys, where we'll take a look at what they're actually doing and develop programming around the movements and the muscles that they use in their sport and try to, I guess, hone that even more using after we have a good solid strength and conditioning foundation set. So, yeah, and you'll see some of the stuff that we do in terms of using climbing holds, using system boards, using hang boards, using hit strips, doing step-ups, having guys hanging their ice tools, do stuff like that, that is really sport specific in this type of gym setting. Of course, our setting here is artificial. It's not the real thing. But again, we're not trying to train technique in here. All I'm trying to do is to make these guys as strong as I can and as fit as I can in their sport, so they get up to the mountain that much stronger.
Now, there's been a trend recently, an idea in the mainstream media, that very normal people, sort of in questionable physical condition, can hire guides to essentially drag them up 8,000-meter peaks. Is that something that I can get your opinion on?
Probably not.
Okay.
I'm a strength condition coach, not a mountain guide. And, okay. I really can't comment on that.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Fair enough. It seems like maybe that's the wrong way for things to be going, but if you're not comfortable, I can definitely respect that. What observations did you make about military fitness that prompted you to create Military Athlete?
One of the things that I kind of saw right away was that the main thing is that neither the military nor the athletes themselves really treat themselves as professional athletes. And as a result of that, they kind of pull from all these different type of training techniques and do them and then hope they work in the field. I thought that these guys are professional athletes and they deserve programming and strength and conditioning coaching that's catered to their type of activity. So that would be probably the first thing that I kind of saw and saw a need for. And we've had pretty good success with that idea, and the thing is has built quite a bit and is continuing to build along those lines in terms of just changing the thought out there that these guys are professional athletes. I was talking to a Master Sergeant in the Green Berets just the other day, and he's going, Jesus, he goes, I need a strength and conditioning coach. I need a fitness coach. You know, they have scuba coaches. They have shooting coaches. They have, you know, EMT coaches. But the military's always kind of left it up to the soldiers and the sailors themselves and Marines to do their own fitness, where these days, as a country, we're investing so much money in these guys, and fitness is such a huge part of their work. Starting to think of them as professional athletes and treat them like that is important. I hope that we're leading the way in doing that.
Sounds like an important paradigm shift.
Yeah, I think that they're coming to realize that too, and not only in terms of that they're what they want in terms of their coaching, but also on how they treat their own fitness, with the understanding that they are professional athletes and fitness just can't be a second thought. It has to be important, but also it needs to be directed. It can't just be random. It should be directed.
How outmoded are most military PT tests?
I think that they are fairly outmoded, but I'm not too sure we need to change those. Most of the PT tests revolve around body weight, calisthenic exercises, and a run. I guess the bad thing about them is I'm not certain they really test the fitness that soldiers need when they're in a combat or tactical situation. The good thing about them, though, is that they're not that difficult. And so most of these guys can do other training that may be more specific to their tactical work and still get in there and do their fitness test twice a year and do well on it. The fitness test, some units, how you score in that can be a big part of your performance evaluation, so there's quite a bit of stress that goes along with them. And one of the dangers of having a fitness test is ideally it will reflect what the requirement is of the soldiers in the field. The problem with that, though, is that the requirements of the soldiers in the field changes, and they can change frequently. And sniff tests don't change that frequently. It takes so much to get one of those through the bureaucracy and fellow standards and stuff. So we've seen that kind of recently with the shift current wars from Iraq to Afghanistan. There's some fitness requirements for Iraq that aren't the same as Afghanistan. And I would recommend training for soldiers going to one theater or the other differently. It would have different programs for them. But if you have a fitness test that is required by everybody and they train to that test, then they may not be required or be ready when they get to the field. It's kind of, I don't know if you kind of follow what I'm saying, but in general, there's a lot of criticism about the fitness scouts out there, and I'm not too sure they do test what is really required of them when they get into combat. But because they are simple and fairly easy to pass, I'm not too sure they want to change them, because having a fitness test that does reflect what's required of combat, I don't think it'd be flexible enough to change as those combat requirements change. It's kind of a long-winded answer to you, but in general, I think they suck, but I like them all the same.
I noticed that you recently prescribed your own sort of fitness test or sort of diagnostic. Is that something that you'd be interested in describing?
Yeah. It was kind of an interesting idea. We have kind of thought about that for a while in terms of trying to create something that would kind of test some of the things that I think are important in my site, and then kind of throw it out there and see how guys did on it. And our stuff, or our, I guess our tests or assessments, we've kind of developed three of them, and two that we've been able to try out so far. The first one is kind of just a gym-based, work capacity-based test, and I think there's four or five parts of it. The first is a max bench press for reps at 185 pounds, and then the second is a max front squat for reps at 185 pounds. And just about those two lifts, I know a lot of functional, who self-described functional strength coaches don't like the bench press. I like the bench press. This is a great test of overall upper body strength. So that's part of my assessment. It's pretty hard to, when you're doing push-ups, it's kind of easy to, there's some questions, you know, things can come up in terms of form and stuff like that, but the bench press is less wiggle room for that type of thing to come up. Range of motion is pretty set. And in terms of the loading, I thought it was intriguing. The NFL Combine, they use the 225 for reps, and I kind of like that format going ahead. I think maybe it shows a little bit more working strength endurance rather than just a max effort test. So I thought that type of formula would have a weight for reps rather than a max effort would be a way to go. And in terms of the loading, you know, I've worked with operators ranging in weight from 145 pounds to 250 pounds. So I had to choose a loading that I thought was possible by those type of guys amongst that strength or amongst that body weight scale, but also something that a reasonably fit professional athlete should be able to do. And 185 pounds is really not a very heavy bench press. And so, you know, I weigh like 155, and I got it up 10 times. So that's not very strong, but I think that was just a good loading to do. The most we've had yet is like 30 reps for a big guy getting that up. The front squat is just a great leg strength test. Again, 185 is a good load to use for that. One of the things I learned from Dan John is that in terms of strength balance, your upper body and lower body strength balance, your front squat and your bench press should be about the same. And we're finding that here. It's you know, my front squat and bench press reps for the test were both the same at 10 reps. And the guys who are balanced, it's about the same. The guys who are imbalanced, I get results in from guys who are getting up 15 bench presses and 7 front squats at the same loading, and it tells me they've been doing, you know, they're kind of upper body bodybuilding guys. and I also get guys who are the opposite. They have a lot of front squats and low reps on the bench press, and it tells me they're kind of geeky endurance soccer player their whole life. So they've neglected their upper body strength. So that's, those are the first two tests we use. The next one we have is a max deadlift at 225 in 60 seconds. This is kind of unique to one. We wanted a loading that we thought would be a good test of strength. Again, 225 deadlift is not that much weight. Something that could be, that should be able to be done by all these different body sizes, from 140 pounds up to 250. Putting a time limit on it at that loading. I mean, some big guys maybe will go on forever doing that. A time limit. Kind of tested a little bit of speed strength, but also put a little bit of limit to the test. There's the deadlift can be a dangerous lift to do if people start letting their back break. So putting a time limit hopefully limited some of that. And we do dead stop deadlifts. We can't bounce them CrossFit style. I require my athletes to dead stop at the bottom. And I think that's just a great test of full body strength and so a little bit of speed strength. Our next test is we have a 25-meter sprint, we do that, four rounds of that, 60 seconds work, 60 seconds rest, and the score is how many total reps or lengths you get out of all four rounds. So you sprint back and forth 25 meters, custom ground at each end, and let's say you get 10 lengths in the first round. And as you go through, you add your round totals together, and you come out with the final score at the end. Sprinting, I can't think of any more functional exercise for military athletes than sprinting. And a 25-meter sprint is a great effort to do. This also tests anaerobic endurance. I don't know if you've ever done that before, but... It puts you down metabolically, and so it also helps test a little bit of the recovery to be able to get up and hit it again. The next part of that is...
It certainly makes you question what you're doing, that's for sure.
Yeah, we really prescribe a lot of sprinting for military athletes for the metabolic work. The next test is just a max pull-ups, body weight, dead hang pull-ups. I needed to get a pulling exercise in there. And the max rep pull-ups is the best one, I think, to do. And then finally, we finish the first part of the assessment off with a 10-minute effort for reps, so sandbag get-ups at 80 pounds. And a sandbag get-up is an exercise that I just absolutely love here. It's, I think, the best core strength exercise I have. We do a lot of them. It's also a very metabolic exercise. I really think that core midsection strength is important, not only for performance, but also for durability. It's kind of a buzzword, core strength. You can get really geeky with it. We don't get too geeky. The sandbag get-up is almost a strongman exercise, but it works every angle of the midsection, and it works your legs, and it makes you breathe like a mother. So we do that for 10 minutes. So that's the first part of the assessment, all of those little mini tests. And if you hustle through, you can get those all done in an hour. The second part of our assessment is another exercise. It's really sport-specific to walking uphill, to climbing. It's specifically for these guys, most of who are looking at deployments to Afghanistan with the hilly terrain there. And it's 1,000 step-ups for time at 40 pounds on your back. And this is pure drudgery. I call it the grudge. It sucks. It's terrible. In my experience, step-ups are a phenomenal way, a very transferable way to train hiking uphill in a gym setting. And we just put packs on guys, tell them they got to go to 1,000 steps, 500 each leg. We use boxes 17 to 19 inches high, and you just go for time. And it's an endurance effort. It took me over 45 minutes to do. And, my heart rate was probably at 200 at the end. It's just stepping up and climbing hill is not only an aerobic, metabolic, cardio effort, but it's also a strength effort. You're essentially doing 500 one-legged squats with each leg. And 40 pounds is a fairly medium-sized loads these guys will have out there. So that's the second part. Our third part of the assessment will be a range fitness assessment, and I haven't quite developed that yet, but that's where we'll take them to the range and make them breathe hard and see if they can shoot straight.
And that's the stress shoot type of format, correct?
Yeah, I guess stress shoot would be a military term for it. I call it range fitness. But yeah, that's where we've done quite a bit of guinea pigging experimenting with this. And we get operators at a range setting, and I make them, put them in a kit and helmet, and make them sprint and do thrusters, do sandbag get ups, cleans, you know, burpees, and all in an effort to get them to breathe hard. And then make them shoot at targets, and we're trying to train the ability there to control your heart rate, control your breath, control your stress, and put rounds on target. It's the most sport-specific thing I can do for military athletes. And what I'm finding is, even the special operators I've worked with really don't get to the range that much. They generally don't practice this when they do go to the range. They get a little bit of the stress shoot work when they go to shooting schools. But I'm trying to develop ways where it's easy and functional to train and coach that ability in the gym and at the range setting. So the idea is to train it more frequently. The more frequently you can train something, the better you can get at doing it. I want to develop an assessment. It's kind of where it all comes together. If you're not very fit, then you're going to be worked that much more when you come to shoot. But if you can't shoot straight, if you can't control your breathing and stuff, it really doesn't matter how fit you are. Your rounds aren't going to be on target. So it's kind of combining those two, combining that complex motor skill of being able to do something very physical and putting it together with the fine motor skill of marksmanship and creating this complex motor skill.
I think that sounds very promising. It'll be interesting to see the feedback that you continue to receive as we go forward. Previously, you mentioned specific demands for those being deployed to Iraq, possibly operating in urban terrain, or those going to Afghanistan functioning in an area of responsibility above 8,000 feet. Talk a little bit about what you find particularly difficult about those two situations.
Well, the two terrain differences is what I am kind of concerned about. The main difference, of course, is Afghanistan and the rocky terrain, and also just the vertical hill climbing these guys need to do, you know, in their kits and with rucksacks. So they need to get there being able to ideally be pretty proficient at walking uphill, hiking uphill. And believe it or not, there's more to that than you think. It's its own mode of cardio activity. I know from firsthand experience you cannot just run long distance on flat terrain and then put a pack on and expect to climb uphill very well. Not only is it an aerobic cardio mode of activity, but it's also a lot of strength involved. You need a lot of leg strength to walk uphill. And so we've just developed a kind of a 6-week pre-deployment Afghanistan training program for guys, and I'm just giving it to these guys out there who are getting deployed. And there's a lot of step-ups in it. These guys are going to hate me for doing all the step-ups they have to do. Because that's the best way I can train, being able to climb vertically in a gym setting. In Iraq, it's a little bit, you really don't need to be able to walk uphill training, if you're going to be deployed to Iraq. But in that urban setting, I think there's a little bit more of a need because there might be close combat and maybe more obstruction removal, a little bit need for more upper body strength. My Afghanistan pre-deployment program, all we do for upper body stuff is body weight push-ups, pull-ups, and dips. I actually wouldn't mind these guys losing some of the upper body weight and mass. I don't think they need it as much in Afghanistan, and that's just going to weigh them down when they're hiking around. But in Iraq, I think they're going to need a little bit more of that. And for both theaters, Sprinting is really important, and they need to be able to sprint in their kits, in their helmets, and so that's another aspect of, I guess, my sport-specific training. I've done it for Iraq or Afghanistan. I haven't put together a program for Iraq, but it would definitely be a big part of my Iraq program.
You know, it's interesting to hear those recommendations. Those are things, you know, that I've seen sort of thrown around in sort of different places. But to hear them sort of brought together, I think, is important just because, you know, there's probably going to be operations in cities, built-up areas, and then there's probably also going to be sort of long-term counterinsurgency in rural places. So I think that that's probably very useful. And I think the step-ups, as much as, you know, they sound really bad, do sort of solve the problem of the Soviet experience, where they had their really great Spetsnaz forces that were essentially immobile because of the weight of their packs and the environment. So that's definitely a problem to tackle, and it seems like you're addressing that. Does the CrossFit style programming with the multiple rounds of the same exercise for time have particular benefits, possibly mental toughness?
Oh, certainly, yeah. We use CrossFit type programming within our work here. I think that Coach Glassman has proven that in terms of developing general fitness and general work capacity, his programming, I don't think there's a better one out there. This stuff really, really works. And so when we do work capacity stuff, we'll throw in intense multimodal circuits right along the CrossFit programming lines. And we do use, I do believe that the gym, I do believe that mental trust, toughness is something that can be trained and should be trained in the gym format. I do think that it's one of the most transferable things you'll get from the gym to the outside the gym is that mental toughness. I've heard that from many of my professional mountaineers who were world-class badasses before they ever walked through my doors, but they report back that, you know, when they're out in their field after training in the gym for some time, they don't only feel stronger, but they just feel stronger mentally. And so, yeah, and those circuits are certainly probably my most effective way to train that mental toughness. We coach it here. We coach athletes on when to take a rest, how to limit the rest, and we reward them for demonstrating mental toughness and criticize them when they don't. So certainly, yeah, there's certainly an element to it for sure, and the CrossFit circuit tools is or method or I guess or format workout of the day format is the tool that I use primarily to train that. I don't say primarily, but it's one of the major tools I use to train mental toughness.
I noticed you listed Mark Twight as an influence. Has his writing on topics like suffering or compassion or even sort of more general Eastern philosophical ideas shaped the way you work with athletes?
I don't know so much that. More his strength and conditioning stuff. I went and attended a seminar there with Twight and was just pestering him with questions the whole time. I think that I'm not too sure I apply as much importance to the gym training in terms of character development and stuff as he does. That is maybe a difference between us. And I don't want to speak for Mark. My impression is just that he thinks the gym is a great place to test and build character. And I certainly think it has that possibility, but I think it's still an artificial environment, I guess it's I don't know. I guess it's just this application of that stuff may be a little bit limited. And in terms of the Eastern philosophy stuff, Mark's far ahead of me on that stuff. I'm just a dumb gym rat, so I don't really talk too much philosophy with my athletes, although some of them are practicing Buddhists. My philosophy is lift the damn weight.
Well, I always, I go back and forth about a lot of his stuff in terms of, whether I think it's really, really useful or not. And I figured I'd put the question to you since you have more familiarity, but fair enough.
I will say that Mark is a really interesting guy, and he's a phenomenal writer.
And, yes, yeah, very, very much so.
He really makes you think. So, he's a really smart guy, and I think he's a wonderful coach. I've really learned a lot from him, and respect him a whole lot.
Based on your experience, have you come across fitness-related limitations that could affect military capabilities or capacities related to power projection?
Well, power projection is kind of a big concept for my me. But in general, one of the most interesting things that I've learned in working with the military guys so far is the most important thing that I do with them, or the most important thing, gym type of thing, or stuff I do with them is our range fitness stuff. And one of the things that has been really interesting is the guys who seem to do the best at the range fitness stuff are leaner guys with endurance cardio backgrounds. And even when we put in, strength type modes and exercises within the range fitness sessions, those guys do the best. And one of the limitations I've kind of seen in the military guys, and I think it just is like me, they're still trying to figure out their type of programming, but I see a lot of guys with big-ass biceps and chests and all that extra mass and muscle. Their strength is almost too strong based on my strength standards. They're too strong in their upper bodies, and that extra mass they carry around actually hurts them. It's just more weight to carry around. It hurts their cardio. It hurts their recovery. And so it's made me, this result that I've seen has caused me to think a little bit about my programming. And for example, right now we're dropping into a stamina cycle with my military athletes. We're going to be doing more long stuff and trying to build that base cardio and base aerobic fitness up. I just can't argue with the number. I just can't argue with what I've seen. In general, I would think that going in, I wouldn't have thought that. I would have thought that the military athletes, the guys who had the highest work capacity, a combination of mental toughness and strength the guys who did best on the hard circuits in the gym would do best at the range. But it's not the case. The guys who did best at the range were these tall, lean, geeky endurance guys who didn't do especially well in the gym. They were weak compared to some of the other guys. But at the range, they did the best. And it's that range stuff that's as close to the combat situation that I can put them in, and so that's influenced me quite a bit in terms of my thinking about this stuff for sure. So that's the main thing. The other thing I've kind of noticed is that even guys who've been doing my program for a while are really hesitant to lift heavy in the gym. That's really an interesting aspect, and I see this all the time. There's a lot of jeopardy for men in a gym, in the weight room. We're all afraid of looking weak, and there's also some kind of cultural gym type of thing that say you can get hurt going heavy, and those things kind of combine to keep guys from going to one rep maxes and lifting and seeing where they're at. And of course, if they're not lifting heavy, Dan John will tell you this: you got to lift heavy to get strong, and so that limits their strength. That's the second thing, the major thing that I've kind of noticed is there's some unfamiliarity to lifts, but there's really a hesitancy for these guys to go heavy. And so we do it a lot in my gym and my programming. And I've got, tiny housewives who weigh 115 pounds, you know, doing max deadlifts and max front squats. we do it often. We do it often because not only do I think it's important for strength, but it's also important to get over the fear of doing it and get over the hesitancy. And my athletes now, you know, who work with regularly, it's not a big deal to do a one rep max test. They're excited to do it. They want to see where they're at instead of that hesitancy. So those two things have been kind of really interesting that I've kind of observed amongst the military athletes. Given the testosterone in the military athletes, you think they'd want to lift heavy, but they don't.
I guess the question that raises for me is, are there enough of those endurance-type athletes, you know, 5'6", 145 pounds with really low body fat, to sort of fill the ranks of all those units where they need to be?
The endurance athletes I'm talking about are like, you know, 6'2 and 190 pounds.
So you're talking about different guys.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they're tall, lean guys.
Okay.
No, I don't think this is, you know, there's all types of different body sizes amongst the ranks, and especially the special forces units I've worked with, tall or tiny, kind of meat-belly guys like me to guys like me who have a real endurance background, who are even leaner and skinnier to monsters on the other side. So it's not really a matter of, I think, looking for the best type athlete in terms of body size, but I think it's just a matter of thinking a little bit about the type of fitness and training that they're doing. And again, a lot of these guys are coming to my stuff and Jim Jones and CrossFit from gym backgrounds that were kind of based on bodybuilding stuff. And so they're coming into it with big biceps and big chests. And there used to be a big culture in the military for that type of body, and I think that's getting changed a little bit. I don't think it's really a matter of finding the right body types, but just get them in there and getting the guys who are mentally tough and then training them appropriately. And part of that training might be more of the long stuff and building that cardio then, and maybe less the upper body strength stuff.
I think we're about out of time. We've covered a lot, but if people are interested in following up with what you said, reading more about what you've written, where can they go to do that, and how can they contact you?
The internet's best. We got a couple sites. One is a Mountain Athlete, and its website is mtnathlete.com. It's Mike Tango November athlete.com. And then our military athlete is just militaryathlete.com. And then you can see our programming and my contact info on there and my phone number and everything else. So in the email, people are welcome to ask me questions.
Rob, I appreciate the time. Thank you, and it's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Luke. Take you, Luke.
All right.
Good luck to you.
All right. Take care.
Okay, bye.